Hi, everybody. My name is Bob W. I'm an alcoholic. Really excited to be here tonight. Never been to this meeting before, but I know many of the home group members, and thank you, Sam. It's nice to be asked to do things today. I know at the end of my drinking, nobody wanted me around. Nobody wanted me a part of. Nobody invited me to go too many places. And today, through Alcoholics Anonymous and sobriety, life is much different. And, you know, real excited to be here tonight for many reasons. You know, I woke up this morning, and I got an anniversary coming up. My sobriety date is March 16th, 2008. So 1 month, I should celebrate 6 years of sobriety. And I woke up this morning just thinking, you know, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. And, you know, usually this time of the year, a lot of reflection comes up, coming up on an anniversary and, you know, remembering where I came from and, you know, what things are like now. And, you know, I hope I never forget that, where alcohol took me to and, you know, what it's still capable of taking me back to. And, but anyway, I hope to tell a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And, you know, hopefully pass on a little bit of hope that was passed on to me when I first came in. And, yeah, I grew up in a small town of Remington, Virginia. I went to Remington Elementary. Had an older brother, 2 years older. Lived a pretty well childhood. Came from an upper middle class family, grew up on a small farm, and none of my parents really seen drink, but an alcohol in the house, and I'm the only alcoholic in the immediate family, but I did find out a little bit down the line about a great uncle, and found out more about my uncle, which helped get me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a great uncle that committed suicide, struggled with what they told me, amphetamines and alcohol, and have a uncle that I'm still in contact today that has gone through a liver and a kidney transplant, and that was about 12 years ago, and still sober and, you know, doing fine. And but through all their struggles helped me, you know, find the rooms. And, you know, with that, you know, had a pretty happy childhood, was involved with a lot of sports and outdoor activities. I remember my first drink at a very early age. I was at a picnic in Noakesville, might have been 5 years old, and there was maybe a keg beer there. And I don't remember much about, I was running around playing, it was a hot summer day, and I was thirsty, and there was some cups sitting around, and I just grabbed them and drank. You know, I probably didn't even know what beer was. And I kind of remember how people looked at me then. They were like, ooh, he's drinking, we'll put that down or something. I remember that response, and maybe some pointing and snickering that I was drinking this stuff, maybe I shouldn't do it. And but that's about all I remember. And they told me I slept a lot on the ride home. So, you know, later on we moved to Remington to the small farm, and you know, involved with Boy Scouts a little bit, and played just about every sport I could find a ball for or whatnot. And you know, really enjoyed childhood. And, you know, at the time, everything was there that a child needed. You know, food was there, love was there, a roof was over us, and, you know, I had an older brother to play with. And that was, at the time, you know, that was all I knew. And, you know, somewhere along the way, you know, I remember, and I was thinking about this a little bit today, maybe their money was somewhat a lot of talk was always going on about bills or being thrifty or we don't have money for that. Somewhere along the way, I kind of, you know, became aware that somewhat we were living real thrifty. And, you know, there wasn't extra money for things, you know, that maybe some of my friends in school had or toys or that kind of thing. And there might have been a little jealousy there as a child. But a lot of that might have been made up in my head. But anyway, going on, you know, involved with these activities. And about 11 or 12, I find myself at Boy Scout camp. And I'm down in Williamsburg, Virginia. And there was an older group that was planning a little party. And I remember the party was going to be on a Friday, and that all week we were talking about how experienced drinkers we were. And I had no experience, but I wanted to fit. I was telling them, you know, I could drink six. I could outdrink you, you, and you. And, you know, really had no experience, but wanted to fit in. And so the night of that party, you know, I engaged with some drinking, and I think there might have been some outside issues there, some marijuana. And remember, you know, the next morning of the terrible hangover, and I think I slept in a bathtub that night, and it just didn't go over real well for this guy. And, you know, I don't think I really engaged much with the drinking or anything else for many years. You know, maybe a little bit here and there, but it wasn't real active part of my lifestyle then. And you know, move into junior high and high school, and I'm playing sports. I'm kind of excelling in a couple of different areas. You know, okay with grades and that, getting by as kind of a B student. And but I think, you know, through sports, I was involved with and kind of made a decision to go forward with one sport and drop all the others. And now I'm a freshman in high school, and I'm on varsity, and I'm participating on the varsity wrestling team. And I'm with, you know, 18-year-old seniors and some older guys, and, you know, they're inviting me to the varsity parties and this kind of thing. And so I'm involved with some of those activities. And I remember, you know, some drinking some real needy peach wine, and, you know, still didn't have a taste much for booze. You know, beer was hard to get down, but, you know, I liked the effect. I liked being with the excitement of the party. I think that was what I was more attracted to, was, you know, the social aspect of the friendships and, you know, the camaraderie and that kind of thing. Growing up on that small farm in Remington, we didn't have much social activities. I had my older brother and a couple, you know, pets maybe, and, you know, that was it. So getting out, any time to get off that farm was exciting, you know, to do anything. And I think that led me into sports and then, you know, some of that social stuff. So anyway, moving on, you know, we're drinking a little bit, and I'm getting active in the social scene a little bit, and, you know, things are going well. You know, one thing that stands out, my senior year of high school, I kind of, I didn't meet my goal, and I was kind of disappointed athletically. And you know, I think that spring of my senior year, things kind of, you know, it was like, I don't care anymore, you know, we're gonna just let our hair out and get wild. And you know, I had some opportunities to go to college mainly through sports. And you know, I remember going to high school parking lot with a cooler in the back of my car, iced down beer and that kind of thing, going to school. And you know, I was just pretty much getting by at that point. And had a little brother that was born somewhere along, you know, it was 13 years difference. So, you know, a lot of the family focus was on him as an infant, and, you know, I was doing fine, and I kind of was on my own at that point. And so anybody that really wanted to drink, I was hanging with, and kind of making some decisions on where to go to school, and had a couple different opportunities, and there was one place that kind of caught my eye, and it caught my eye. This is in 1990, and in 1989, Playboy magazine had top 10 party schools, and somehow I ended up at one of those schools. And anyway, so I'm going to this small teacher's college up in Pittsburgh, north of Pittsburgh, and you know, it's 6 hours away from home, and we're going to party up there, and it's going to be new and different, and you know, kind of go, you know, set some more goals for myself as far as college athletics go. And so I'm off to college, and you know, I find out up there I'm a, you know, in Warrington, I was a big fish in a small pond. And up there in college, you know, I'm 18 now, and I'm up against guys that are in the military at 28 years old, and I'm kind of skinny, and these guys are giving me black eyes, and I'm like, I don't know if I really fit in here. And so I hung in there for the first year, and, you know, immediately some of those older guys took me under their wing, and I'm partying with the seniors and the grad students, and, you know, somehow that was always my little niche. I could find the social gatherers. I was a social guy, and I could find that stuff, and, you know, I come to a crossroads that second year and didn't know if it was, you know, where I was going to turn. And, you know, I redshirted that year. I hung in there and moved off campus, and really I started experimenting with some drugs. And my 21st birthday, you know, there was a lot of different things involved there. But 21st birthday, I remember experiencing cocaine, and, you know, alcohol was involved with my entire story. And but there are some outside issues that I will touch on. And so moving on to my final year of college, and I'm another letdown. Expectations, I should be in Iowa at the national tournament, and I get upset in the semifinal round. I don't get to go to Iowa, so we go to Panama City Beach. We're not going to the national tournament, we're going to spring break. And so I ended up graduating college there, but wasn't ready for the real world, and I had that one redshirt year eligibility left, and I went back kind of as a post-grad student, and still had my goals in mind. I still had 1 year to compete, and so I'm going back, and I'm training hard, and I'm drinking hard, and I'm drugging hard, and I'm trying to reach these goals, but physically my body can't keep up. And you know, I think I'm ready, and it's January of my fifth year, and I'm, you know, pretty much said I'm gonna put the bottle down, and I'm really gonna focus on, you know, winning this thing. And I got a national ranking, and I'm you know, kind of in the right direction. Arguing with myself about, you know, what's most important. And so actually I'm competing against Virginia Tech of all places, and you know, I beat the guy 15-0, and then I can't walk an hour afterwards, and I ended up having knee surgery. That was the end of my college career. And a lot of resentment, a lot of confusion, and really then that's when my drinking and drugging took off to levels that you know, blinded me. I'm floating around campus. I'm kind of lost. I'm falling down. I just stopped going to class. And, you know, it's gonna, kind of like I'm just buying time, getting screwed up here. And my older brother kind of saw it. And through that, I had a couple little run-ins with the law. I had a couple little run-ins before that. But my older brother kind of saw it, and he had just graduated from Charlottesville, and he's in Baltimore now, and he invites me up to see his new place, and he's engaged, and he's got a new house, and I'm going to Baltimore to visit, and I'm bringing my college roommate, and we're going to happy hour. And, you know, long story short, we're at this thing and we're drinking too much, and we get an altercation with some bouncers, and my brother gets taken on the ambulance, and I get locked up. And I remember being up in front of the judge, kind of at the podium here, and I'm talking to the judge, and I turn around, and I see my brother, and he's mangled. He's in bad shape. And, you know, it was all about my drinking. You know, it was all about the consequences affected other people. And, you know, until I began to get sober, I had no idea on all the people that I affected around me and the damage that was done. And, you know, self-centeredness that was involved with some of my lifestyle and activities. You know, more is still being revealed. This past year opened my eyes to another amends that I had no idea existed. You know, thank goodness for this program, and it showed me a way to get through some of this stuff and to make amends and to deal with some of these things. So anyway, we're in Baltimore, and we go back to Pittsburgh, and semester's over, and I'm out of money, and got nowhere to go, and so it's time to move on, and I go back to Baltimore for this court case, and I'm stop at a bookstore and pick up a classified newspaper for two cities that were kind of booming at the time, Charlotte, North Carolina, Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm shotgunning resumes to Charlotte and Atlanta. We're getting out of Pittsburgh. We're getting out of, can't go to Baltimore because I've done damage there. And can't go back to Warrenton because I had a couple altercations with the law already. And we're going to go down south where it's warm. You know, that cold weather kind of scarred this Virginia boy, and, you know, it's going to be different down south. And, you know, today I know that the same Bob traveled with me. You know, I had good intentions, and I meant to you know, start over with a clean slate, but somehow alcoholism kept falling back into my life. And, so I get my first job out of college. You know, I could dress up nice. I could put on a coat and tie and tell you what you wanted to hear and play the game. And inside there was a raging alcoholic. And I could hold on for 30 days, 60 days, and put on a game face. But inside, you know, the bottle was calling. And so I'm in Atlanta, and I'm working at a country club. Managing the pools and personal training and fitness center and all this stuff. And, you know, I hung in there for maybe 4 or 5 months, and the bars were calling. A little area called Buckhead of Atlanta was pretty much happening, and the Braves were in the World Series, and I really had to drink. And, you know, I hung into that job for just a few more months, and the boss wasn't treating me right, and I deserved better, and this and that, and she fired me. And, you know, I created all that drama and chaos about, you know, we need to fire her, and you sign this petition, and, well, that didn't go very well either, because, you know, I was looking to blame somebody else besides look at Bob, and, you know, I did find my way into, I made some connections there at the country club, and I went back to something that, you know, something I knew well, I knew a lot about, and something I was, had a resentment against, and that was the sport of wrestling. And a coaching position opened at this private school down the street, and I took it, and they kind of created a position for me. And I really had it nice there. I was, you know, coaching in the afternoons, and kind of they gave me a kind of a position during the day, but I really didn't have to be accountable, and that led to a lot of drinking. And the bars were open until 4 a.m, and I pretty much don't have to be accountable during the day, and practice at 4 o'clock, and I could kind of shake a hangover by then. And so I'm hanging in there, and you know, we're doing pretty well, and we're winning some championships as a coach, and you know, my drinking is just progressing, and I'm making excuses why this happened and that happened, and why I couldn't be at this meeting or couldn't be at this practice, and my drinking is really escalating. And I hung in there for a few years, and then it became pretty obvious, and They didn't renew my position, and you know, I had resentments, and you know, they don't know who they're losing, and but all the writing was on the wall. They seen it in my eyes, they seen it in my face, they seen it in my actions, and you know, I was, they knew I was a time bomb ready to embarrass the school. And so, you know, I went up to the next school, and I hung in there for about 2 years and did pretty well. And but you know, there are a couple things that stand out. At this time, I'm still living in downtown Atlanta, and I'm commuting to Cobb County, Marietta, and it's about a 45-minute commute. And some days I'm staying at the bar, some day I'm staying at the old roommate's house, some days I'm going up to Marietta. And One morning, I remember waking up, and I'm in my car. My car is running. I'm in a gas station parking lot north of Marietta, and I was trying to drive home in a blackout. And, you know, a lot of these near misses had happened in my life. I was like, man, I got to do something about this drinking. It's just gonna, you know, I'm going to get in trouble. It's, you know, but I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know where to go. I just... You know, I got to get away from these bars. I got to get out of Atlanta. You know, I got to get a fresh start again. And so I moved to Florida. I take a college coaching job at the University of Central Florida. You know, pretty close to the beach. I like to surf. I like the beach. I like the sun. And they party down there by Daytona Beach a lot. And, you know... But it's going to be different down there because I'm starting on a clean slate, and I'm taking the same Bob with me, and my mind's telling me, you know, it's going to be different. And so I'm down in Orlando, and I'm coaching college, and you know, we're doing okay. We're winning some things, and I'm looking good on paper, and I'm, you know, getting a new haircut, and I'm dressed up, and I'm putting on the show, and you know, I make it a few months, and the bottle's calling. And, you know, I'm starting to make excuses about practice and this and that. And, you know, but I'm still kind of hanging in there. And, you know, track record's being proven over time. You know, if I look back and I see today, I can see, you know, clearly that I could hold off for a little bit, but eventually the bottle caught up with me. And, you know, and I'm down there and I'm trying to get fixed, and what do I need to do? I need to find a good girl to straighten me out. And you know, I find one at a bar, and we're, you know, she's just like me, you know, and she's, you know, doing these, drinking like I am, and she's doing these outside issues like I am, and man, it's perfect, you know, and maybe we should get married, you know, maybe she can fix me. And well, that didn't last too long, and I stayed down in Florida 2 years, and there was a lot of writing on the wall, and, you know, I won some more awards down there as a coach, and in 2004, I was the National College Coach of the Year. but the bottle, you know, had me bad. And, you know, I resigned from that position and found myself framing houses down in the summer of Florida, hot summer of Florida. And, you know, I couldn't stop drugging. I couldn't stop drinking. I was drinking every morning. And, you know, just to deal with life, just to deal with, you know, my brain, deal with her, deal with my parents, deal with that farm, deal with it was raining that day, dealing with, you know, whatever happened. And, you know, I kind of had felt like, you know, I'd owed it to myself to keep on drinking, you know, but I'm living, my living quarters are pretty poor, and, you know, relationship's not going well. There's too much writing on the college job. I had to get out of there, and I'm, you know, find myself working construction, and, you know, same thing. The bottle's got me. I'm calling in, kind of making excuses and this and that, and, you know, I meet a guy down there, and I kind of got close to him. I'm telling him, man, she's doing this to me and this and that, and I can't stop drinking. And he's like, well, you think you have a problem with alcohol? I said, yeah, I think I do. He's like, do you think you're an alcoholic? And I said, yeah, I probably am. He's like, would you like to go to a meeting with me? And I said, man, I'll try anything, you know, and, you know, my way, I try to beat this thing a thousand different ways, just beer, just weekends, just special occasions, just in Florida, just in different jobs, you know, tried it, you know, every different way. And, you know, I was getting rid of family, friends, I was getting rid of friends, I was getting rid of relationships, and the same misery was still upon me. And so I go to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in DeLand, Florida. There's a little clubhouse there. And, you know, this guy's, he's a year or two younger than me, and he's got about a year of sobriety. And, you know, I was attracted to him. You know, he had some things that were going his way, and things weren't going mine. You know, I had another DUI down in Florida, and, you know, just things weren't going my way. And so I'm going to some meetings, and I'm hanging in there and getting back together with the girl, and she's drinking and I'm drinking, and I'm going to meetings, and, you know, I'm kind of just trying to find my way some more. And, you know, something happened, and it happened with the relationship, and it was pretty painful for me. And so I call home, and I'm thinking, you know, I call back to the farm, and I'm thinking, you know, I think I told her, I said, Mom, things aren't going real well down here. I'm in bad shape, and I'm coming home. And she said, all right, come on home. And I said, if I'm not home in a week, come find me or something. Because I had some loose ends to tie up before I'm, you know, leaving Florida. You know, I had some important stuff to take care of. And, well, she came down the next couple of days. And I said, whoa, this is on my terms. You know, I'm coming when I'm coming. And, you know, I don't suggest anybody that's in bad shape call your mom and say, come looking for me in a week. Anyway, so I make it back to the farm, and, you know, I've got a meeting list in Warrenton in Culpeper, and, you know, it's going to be different up here. And, you know, I'm really focused on trying to get this thing right. And so I go to a few meetings, and, you know, I'm bebopping in and out of Warrenton AA, and find a group in Remington, the Remington Out-of-Towners group, which, you know, I began to call my home group. And, you know, I stuck around there for a few months, and I got to meet some people. I'm glad David's here tonight. And, you know, I seen where Alcoholics Anonymous had really changed some people. You know, I got to meet Bill Johnson and some people like Bummy and Ralph Wilson and and some other people that really, you know, Steve Toole and Scotty Curtis, and these people that really were making a difference. You know, that their life was different because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, a lot of those people aren't around anymore. And, you know, but I got hung up with this one fella, and he was always going out of town. And he was going to a retreat in Williamsburg. He was going to Sessions by the Sea in Ocean City, Maryland. He'd been to Montreal to the International Convention. And I just assumed that the Remington out-of-towners group is because he's AA people go out of town all the time. And little do I know, and today I know that it's called the out-of-towners group because nobody's from Remington. You pretty much have to travel to get there. And but anyway, fortunate enough to get involved with some of these people that were going out of town, and I was attracted to that. You know, and I remember going to Charlottesville to a music festival with Davis, and I was about 2 months sober, and my skin was crawling, and David talked to me about my motives, and we're going down here to listen to some music and have a good time. We're not going down here to drink and drug. And he took me to a couple other places, Ocean City, Maryland sessions. And, you know, it opened up a whole another world for me, seeing thousands of alcoholics just, you know, smiling and really happy that they're alive and sober. And I was coming around. I still was, you know, kind of confused and a little wishy-washy. And I really was trying to get sober to prove that it was her fault down in Florida, you know. I was going to prove to the family that she really had the problem, and, you know, I'm this, you know, I'm okay with everything. My life's okay. And, you know, it usually happens that way after about 6 months or a little bit of time of clean time, you know, drying out. You know, you get a couple paychecks and you clean up a little bit and you don't smell as bad, and you my best thinking said, I need to be around some young people. And it's Friday night. They had given me the key to make coffee at the Big Book Study in Warrenton. And I'm thinking, man, I'm single. This is an 8:30 meeting. And, you know, I'm going to give this key back. And, you know, I think I'm just going to go to this other fellowship where the young people are. And, you know, and I've seen AA working in these old people's lives. And I've seen these young people, you know, and it was pretty much the blind leading the blind, and some of those people were really crazy, and I'm like, I'm not that messed up. And at that time, honestly, I was not. And so I went out to drink some more. And you know, I spent some of the most painful years of my life, the next 3 years, drinking and drugging, and driving down this way from Remington today, you know, I passed a lot of different spots that were a vital process of feeling the pain, you know, I was running with different crowds. I could always be like a chameleon. I would go to different places. I could, in Atlanta, I could mingle with the brothers in the city, and you know, I could speak a little Spanish. I was partaking in some activity in different areas, different cultures, and you know, I remember finding myself in a hotel room one night, and there's a lot of narcotics in the room, a lot of, and there's some guns, big guns, and there's some girls, and I'm the only white guy in there, and I'm thinking, man, what in the world has my life become? I'm in a bad, you know, I'm running with some rough people, and you know, I'm consuming quantities that I never dreamed were possible. And you know, that day, March 16th, 2008, I woke up
And back at the farm, had been what I call couch surfing. I've been staying anywhere anybody would take me, living in basements. And, you know, I remember, you know, getting kicked out of, peeing in closets and getting kicked out of places and just, you know, where it had taken me. And nobody wanted me around. And, you know, I didn't plan. When taking that first, or even having that cooler in my car in high school, you know, never did I dream that it could get to that point, you know, that there were some good times, but somehow that bottle turned on me. And, you know, I remember waking up that morning and something had come on me like it never had before. I was physically shaking. And, you know, I had the internal shakes with DTs and that kind of thing, but I was physically shaking. It was different. And, you know, the piggy bank was empty and I needed a drink. And for the first time, I begged Mom and Dad to get me something to drink. You know, I made it home. You know, where does every tough drug dealing kind of tough guy end up? Is back to his mama's house. And, you know, trying to get right. And I exhausted all solutions, and I'm back at the house, and I'm shaking awful, and the piggy bank's empty, and I need to drink. And, you know, at this point, I have no driver's license, and I remember stealing a car, going to this fella's house, and taking two bottles of wine out of his house, because I needed it so bad, and make it back to the farm, you know, I'm throwing up and I'm shaking, and you know, I really felt like the end was near. I was going to die, and I had been through plenty of hangovers before, but this was something different. And, you know, through all the years, that everybody had asked me, "When are you going to do something about the drinking? When is it going to end? When are you going to quit?" And never did I have an answer, but they were just waiting. And that day I asked for help. I said, "I think I need to get help." And I had been to psychiatrists. I had been to the hospital. I had been to plenty of different places trying to get right, but never really accepted help. And they knew right where to take me. And they had been waiting for me to surrender for a long time. And took me down to New Hope Detox down in Stanton. And they allowed me to drink on the way down there, and I drank a 12-pack of beer. That's about an hour and a half trip. And I get down there and starting to feel a little better, but, you know, I'm in bad shape, and I'm like, "Man, just give me a shot. Just give me something to make me feel better." And, this is no medication facility, and I was ready to check out right then. They said, "We will monitor your heart rate, your blood pressure, and if something comes up, we'll take you directly to the hospital." And that was enough for me to stay. And so I checked myself in there, or got dropped off or whatnot, and there were 5 days of detoxing that were just incredibly tough. I saw monsters. I sweated. It was awful. And I hope I'll never forget that. I couldn't hold my tray for a couple of days, and I remember the assistance, but physically I couldn't stop shaking. And you know, I understand the disease when they talk about the physical compulsion, and then the mental obsession. And you know, I had no power against the first drink. Today I do, through this fellowship. You know, so I'm through detox, and I find myself back down to day 5 or 6, and they're about ready to send me back out to the streets, and I break down crying to the detox counselor, and I said, I don't think I'm ready to go back out. And I said, "I think I need something more, maybe a treatment program. I've never been to treatment before." And he made some calls, and I found myself checking in that day at Boxwood, the old Boxwood up here, and on Route 29. And I go meet the counselor there, and he said, "Yeah, you're going to be welcome. You're going to be down in room 17 around back in the corner. And, you know, lunch is dinner's at 5:30 and welcome." And so I go down to the room, and I open the door, and I'm like, "Oh, they must have given me the wrong room." this is the old boxwood, and you know, there's wires hanging down, insulation, there's mold everywhere, and the place is filthy. And I go back, march up there, and hey, I'm Bob W., and you know, you might have been a mistake here. I need a need a suite or something, is what I was looking for. And at that point, you know, I think what I was looking for was a refund, you know, for this treatment center that I was on some state-funded aid for. I was just trying to get some money out of the counselor. And anyway, he said, look, dude, this Friday's after 5 o'clock. Everybody's gone. You know, if you want to check out, that's up to you. But I suggest you see so-and-so in the morning, and they'll be in at 10, and you can talk about this refund. And he's like, but there's one thing that I want you to do, and that's go to this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting at 8 o'clock tonight. And I'm like, all right, so I got to go to this meeting to get my refund. And so I go to this meeting, and something was said there, something that I heard, and it was about living and dying. And it was about, you know, I really needed this thing. And I knew the end was near if I didn't address my drinking. I'd never given Alcoholics Anonymous an honest and thorough chance. You know, I'd been trying to do it my way. And, you know, something was said about living and dying, and that really hit home to me. And, you know, I went back and I mopped that floor and I swept that place and I stayed for 28 days. Found my first sponsor in that treatment center, and who still comes to meetings around this area, Bill Kay. And at that point, I didn't have a driver's license. He was retired, and he lived close to the farm, and he was taking me to meetings every day. And you know, I was going to meetings and go back to that home group, and I said, hey, remember me? It's from 3 years ago, I'm Bob W., and they go, oh, yeah, we remember you. And I said, I'm fresh out of treatment, and, you know, things are going to be different, and I'm going to do this sobriety thing, and I'm going to, you know, get my life back together, and I'm going to do this sobriety thing, and AA, and I'm going to get my driver's license, and I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to get his wife now that I'm sober. I'm going to do all this next week. And they laughed like you guys laughed. And, you know, I had big plans. And, you know, I remember one of the old timers, and he said, easy does it. And then I said, yeah, but I used to be this and I used to be that. And then another one said, easy does it. And, then one spoke up and he said, you make sobriety the most important thing in your life. More than your dream will come true. And standing here tonight, that's been my experience. You know, sobriety is the most important thing in my life today. You know, without that, I don't have the driver's license. I don't have the job. I don't have the family members. I don't have relationships with y'all. And, you know, when I drink, all that stuff goes away. Everything that's most important to me. And, you know, I'm reminded about that today. You know, I'm one drink away from total destruction. And, you know, so I stay close to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I remember, you know, about 60 days into this thing, you know, I'm not really focusing on work. I'm not really focusing on my driver's license. I'm focused on staying sober. And I get invited to go on this weekend retreat. It's a spiritual retreat. You know, they put me on a scholarship to go up there. And that was real important with helping me find a higher power. You know, I realized that I wasn't all bad. I just had a drinking problem. And with y'all, you know, there was support. There was, you know, a better way. And, you know, I believe that compulsion to drink had left me after that weekend. I found something greater than me, you know. And they had talked about, you know, try to believe in something bigger than yourself. And, you know, that was the beginning for me. And to try to pray is to pray. And some of those real simple things, because I was so complicated, I wanted to get this thing just right. I would, you know, get these steps down, and what's the 7th step and 12th step and what's the 13th step and where am I at? And, you know, it was real confusing for me. And they said, just focus on the first 3 steps. And if you want to get into the steps, go to a step meeting and listen. And that became my experience. And I went to a big book study, and I went to a step meeting every week. And, you know, I seen how the steps were working in other people's lives. And, you know, I began to apply these principles in my life. And then, you know, about 2 years down the road, you know, I'm beginning to sponsor people, and I'm beginning to let loose a little bit of. I was real nervous about my sobriety. I wanted to secure my sobriety. I didn't want to be threatened by the newcomers. You know, I was really attracted to some of these old gray haired men with smiles on their face. I wondered what they had. You know, they had. Some of them had retired in sobriety, you know, some of them had driver's licenses and cars, and, you know, all that was a better way for me. And then where I was, at the end of my drinking, I was unemployable, you know, I wasn't driving, I had a lot of legal stuff over my head, and none of that could get me to stop drinking, you know. So I'm 2 years into this thing, and you know, life begins to get good. You know, get my first job in sobriety. I'm sweeping the floor at this farmer's co-op up in Warrington, making $10 an hour, and it's humbling. You know, the process for me was very humbling, and I'd call my sponsor, and I'd tell him. Which was then David, and I'd tell him, you know, I'm having a tough time, having a tough day today, and he'd start to laugh. And I says, yeah, I'm having a tough day. And he's like, what's going on with you? And I said, I don't know, but I think I want to drink a little bit. And he's like, oh, yeah? And he's like, well, what's going on with you? And I said, I don't know. I just think the bottle's calling. He laughed a little bit. And he said, Bob, I know your story, and I know your background, and you don't want to drink anymore. What you want to do is feel different. And, you know, he knew that the bottle wasn't the answer for me. You know, he had seen all the records that I've done. But he had been around enough. And he said, I want you to get honest about what's going on with you and take a deep look at yourself on why you think you want to feel different. And, you know, the process began for me. You know, this inventory. And, you know, looking deep inside myself on what was going on. There was some fear, there was some resentment, there was some jealousy that I had a boss going on that day. And, you know, learning what to do with those items and turning them over was beginning for me, the process, asking for help. And, you know, and that night, you know, saying thank you for another day of sobriety, because it still is the most important to me, you know, important thing in my life. And, you know, year 3 came around, and I had been laid off from that job, and was working for myself, and was able to, that same older brother that I did that damage to, you know, had seen the changes in me, and he was willing to co-sign a loan to help me get off the farm. For an old rundown farmhouse in Goldvein, and place had real bad shape, you know, missing some windows and doors, and but it was a start for me. And you know, through a little bit of hard work, you know, I was able to stay there and make it a home, and then end up you know, parting ways with that place and made a little profit, and it began to build a professional avenue for me. To what I do today, and you know, it was all the process of beginning to be humbled and sweeping that floor, and you know, starting over and realizing that sobriety is the most important thing. And you know, more became enough, and, you know, better became good, and good became great. And my life became to get comfortable in my own skin. And, you know, at 3 years sobriety, I'm in really good shape spiritually. I'm working, actually, at that first sponsor's house, doing some handyman stuff for him. He had just bought a new house. I'm kind of getting it ready to be lived in and doing some contracting. And I get a phone call, and it's my little brother, and he said, "You better come back to the farm. Farm's on fire." So I rush home, and the house is in full flames, and Dad's been taken out in a helicopter, and it's pretty, you know, something you just can't plan for. And, you know, I stuck real strong with the program. It was sad, and Dad was burned, and you know, kind of going through some of that transition, and you know, I stayed right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, the outpouring of people in the program that came and supported and you know, helped and was just overwhelming, you know, hundreds of people. And, you know, I did better with the house burning than I did the rebuilding. you know, some of that ego and pride and false pride came out, and, you know, my parents weren't making the best decisions on the rebuilding, and the builder wasn't doing it right. And, you know, I struggled with some of that, and I had to get that pencil out once again and write some stuff down on what's going on with Bob and why am I so uncomfortable. Why do I want to feel different? And, you know, was able to share some of that, and I got through that without taking a drink. And, you know, I witnessed people in this program before me go through some heavyweight stuff, you know, getting hired, getting fired, loss of loved ones, bankruptcy, you know, death, all kinds of things, and not take a drink. And that was, you know, what was passed on to me. And, you know, it really helped me get through that whole fire process where, you know, it, if I didn't take a drink, it was going to be all right. And, you know, I stuck real close to the rooms, and, you know, today I'm involved with service and working with others. And, you know, through that, you know, I understand what it means, one alcoholic sharing with another. You know, I know what it means to not be alone in this journey. And, you know, I'm involved in a lot of service. We've got a little group up in Warrington that they actually asked me to be on board with some of this experience that sobriety has allowed me to have. And it's a little place I welcome you all to come up. There's a group that hosts 12-step meetings, including Alcoholics Anonymous, among others. And it's called the Warrington Meeting Place. And I'm on board with the board of directors up there. And we've just celebrated our second year anniversary. I think there's might be 13 12-step program, 12-step meetings that go on weekly there now. And I think it's, you know, it's got a bright future. And, you know, I hope you'll look it up in the Winterware and join a meeting up at that location. But Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, has taken me to places, you know, showed me how to have fun again, showed me how to live again. You know, it's constantly revealing things. I find myself laughing at myself a lot. And, you know, the same steps that I went up to become my home group, the Remington Out-of-Towners group, all that laughter that was going on up at the top of those steps when I started walking up with all that pain, I thought I was in the wrong place, you know, because there wasn't anything funny going on in my life when I walked up those steps. And, you know, today, you know, I have trouble deciding what to do. You know, there's so many opportunities. And the end of my drinking, you know, there was no opportunities. There was no out of town. There was no, you know, I was confined to the bottle. And, you know, how small and shallow my life had become. And, you know, I just feel so blessed to have been exposed to this program, and I stopped asking why me, and I just enjoying the ride these days, and being able to pass on a message or some experience, like tonight is just full circle for a guy like me. That when I came here, I didn't think there was a way out. You know, it was going to kill me. And today, life is so full. You know, life is enjoyable. You know, what an easier, softer way. And Sam, thanks for having me come. That's all I have. Thank you.